Just below cloud level, they paused and scanned where they had impossibly come. The ground was something not to regard with any too firm or steady an eye, but merely to glance at, as it were, in passing. Fenchurch tried some little swoops, daringly, and found that if she judged herself just right against a body of wind, she could pull off some really quite dazzling ones with a little pirouette at the end, followed by a little drop which made her dress billow around her. And this is where readers who are keen to know what Marvin and Ford Prefect have been up to all this while should look ahead to later chapters, because Arthur now could wait no longer and helped her take it off. It drifted down and away, whipped by the wind, until it was a speck which finally vanished, and for various complicated reasons revolutionised the life of a family in Hounslow, over whose washing line it was discovered draped in the morning. In a mute embrace, they drifted up till they were swimming amongst the misty wraiths of moisture that you can see feathering around the wings of an aeroplane, but never feel, because you are sitting warm inside the stuffy aeroplane and looking through the little scratchy perspex window while somebody else's son tries patiently to pour warm milk into your shirt. Arthur and Fenchurch could feel them, wispy cold and thin, wreathing around their bodies, very cold, very thin. They felt, even Fenchurch, now protected from the elements by only a couple of fragments from Marks and Spencer, that if they were not going to let the force of gravity bother them, then mere cold or paucity of atmosphere could go and whistle. The two fragments from Marks and Spencer, which, as Fenchurch rose now into the misty body of the clouds, Arthur removed very, very slowly, which is the only way it's possible to do it when you're flying, and also not using your hands, went on to create considerable havoc in the morning in, respectively, counting from top to bottom, Isleworth and Richmond. They were in the cloud for a long time, because it was stacked very high, and when finally they emerged wetly above it, Fenchurch slowly spinning like a starfish lapped by a rising tide pool, they found that above the clouds is where the night gets seriously moonlit. The light is darkly brilliant. There are different mountains up there, but they are mountains, with their own white Arctic snows. They had emerged at the top of the high-stacked cumulonimbus and now began lazily to drift down its contours. As Fenchurch eased Arthur in turn from his clothes, prized him free of them till all were gone, winding their surprised way down into the enveloping whiteness. She kissed him, kissed his neck, his chest, and soon they were drifting on, turning slowly, in a kind of speechless T-shape, which might have caused even a Fuolornis fire dragon, had one flown past, replete with pizza, to flap its wings and cough a little. There were, however, no Fuolornis fire dragons in the clouds, nor could there be, for, like the dinosaurs, the dodos, and the greater drubbered wintwock of Steg Bartle Major in the constellation Fraz, and unlike the Boeing 747, which is in plentiful supply, they are sadly extinct, and the universe shall never know their like again. The reason that a Boeing 747 crops up rather unexpectedly in the above list is not unconnected with the fact that something very similar happened in the lives of Arthur and Fenchurch a moment or two later. They are big things, terrifyingly big. You know when one is in the air with you. There is a thunderous attack of air, a moving wall of screaming wind, and you get tossed aside, if you are foolish enough to be doing anything remotely like what Arthur and Fenchurch were doing in its close vicinity, like butterflies in the Blitz. This time, however, there was no heart-sickening fall or loss of nerve, just a regrouping moments later, and a wonderful new idea enthusiastically signalled through the buffeting noise. Mrs. E. Capelson of Boston, Massachusetts, was an elderly lady. Indeed, she felt her life was nearly at an end. She had seen a lot of it, been puzzled by some, but she was a little uneasy to feel at this late stage bored by too much. It had all been very pleasant, but perhaps a little too explicable, a little too routine. With a sigh, she flipped up the little plastic window shutter and looked out over the wing. At first, she thought she ought to call the stewardess, but then she thought, no, damn it, definitely not. This was for her, and her alone. By the time her two inexplicable people finally slipped back off the wing and tumbled into the slipstream, she had cheered up an awful lot. She was mostly immensely relieved to think that virtually everything that anybody had ever told her was wrong. The following morning, Arthur and Fenchurch slept very late in the alley despite the continual wail of furniture being restored. The following night, they did it all over again, only this time with Sony Walkman.